ESPN 107.3 presents Wild at Heart, bringing outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond. Wild at Heart, powered by Cowtown USA, Colton Steakhouse and Grill, J. Cook Fly Rods, The Outdoor Superstore, Shady Lanes Cabins and Motel, Advanced Performance Shooting, Missouri Trappers Association, Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, and State Farm agent Michelle Beckett. Now, here's Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome to Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3 FM in the pulse of the Ozarks, beautiful Rolla, Missouri. I'm your host, Tommy Bench. My co-host, Jerry Cook, is right here in the studio with me, as is our radio engineer, John Francis. Welcome to Wild at Heart. We are red-blooded Americans who remember and cherish our outdoor heritage. We love America and support the Second Amendment. We stand for our national anthem, say please and thank you, and open doors for the ladies. We hunt, fish, trap, shoot, float, camp, and explore in God's country, the Missouri Ozarks, right out your back door and occasionally a few points beyond. Join us each Wednesday at 4 p.m. right here on ESPN 107.3 FM, or catch us Sundays at 8 a.m. or anytime online at ESPN1073.com. This segment of Wild at Heart is brought to you by J. Cook Fly Rods, Custom Fly Rods, plus everything you need for fly fishing, located in Salem, and Harvey's Alley Spring Canoe Rental, located on the crystal clear Jack's Fork River. Well, here we are, week one, without Mr. Bill Cooper as our host.
Tommy, we've all been looking forward to this.
Well, it's a little bit different, you know, without Bill being here. Like he said, it was a little emotional kind of not having him here.
Yeah, we miss Bill.
Yeah.
Bill's a great guy, and we wish him well with what he's doing now.
Absolutely. I hope wish him nothing but the best. Matter of fact, one of the guys we're going to be talking to later is a good friend of Bill's, Mr. Miloszewski. Ryan Miloszewski. But anyway, we're going to recap what's going on with Wild at Heart. Like I said, I'm Tommy Bench, your new host, and Jerry Cook, co-host, of course. And but we're starting a new chapter here. And just to recap, like I said, I'm just starting as your new host, and we're going to just try to continue on what Bill left behind and keep it a good outdoor show and educational and informational, and anything you'd like to hear, we like to pass it along to you.
Well, from what I've seen on his Facebook post, he's having a lot of fun as well as working hard too.
Oh, I'll bet.
Oh, yeah. He's having a blast, it looks like. Yeah. And I've talked to him a little bit here and there, and so yeah, he's having a good time, and I can't wait to have him back on the show.
I'd love to have him on as a guest sometime.
Yeah. So Tommy, you been getting any fishing in?
Well, what happened is last time we talked, we had I had a big tournament coming up,
right?
And he was asking about my hand, of course. And,
I got it. Let me say to the listeners now. So Tommy comes in, he's got this hand. He's got his left hand all wrapped up, all bandaged up.
Yeah, everyone's been asking me what the heck happened to my hand. Well, long story short, I got it caught in a fan, and a big heavy-duty fan that was running full speed, and I was just checking the guard on it to make sure it was safe so my kids didn't get cut.
Yeah.
And obviously it wasn't
too safe. The guard wasn't.
and it laid me open good. And, of course, I was informed that I needed to go to the hospital and get stitches right away. This is about 9:30 Friday night, you know, the night before.
Okay.
And before my tournament, big tournament. And I said, no, I need to get some sleep so I can fish well tomorrow. And so I just wrapped it up, and I went and fished. And, of course, we fished all day, and I ended up catching the biggest smallmouth I've ever caught in a tournament.
Is
a
wow.
4.5 pounds. It's almost as 438 is what it was. And all caught on camera, so that's pretty neat. And end up winning, taking second overall, winning a big 65-inch TV. So it's worth it.
Nice.
It was a good time. So, but yeah, that's what happened over the weekend as far as that.
So and, so how much did you lose first place by?
Not very much. First place was 11.01, and we had 10.58.
Wow.
So less than half a pound.
Wow, yep. Pretty close.
Yeah, less than half a pound is what we lost that out on. So, but, you know, it was fun. We found this spot that I don't want to speak of yet, and I told my partner, because we record everything. Everything's on the GoPro. And I told Seth, don't post anything until this tournament. We've got another tournament this weekend, and it's our last one of the year. Then we don't have to worry about anything until next spring. But we found a spot that we had never fished before. We found it when the water was clear. Well, this last tournament, the water was mud. It was only you could only see maybe a foot visibility. But the week or two before the previous tournament, you could see 5 or 6 foot. So we're just kind of drifting along fishing, and we see something that both of us think this is going to be good. This is a good. We just knew it was. We ended up winning that tournament. Pretty sure we won that tournament off that one spot. Literally caught everything off that one spot. So our whole objective going into this tournament, mud or not, we knew those fish would still be in that spot, and nobody knows about it. Boats would fly up and down past us, wave at us. No one ever stopped there, ever, because we'd beat it up for about an hour, hour and a half, and then we'd go leave them alone, let them rest, let them kind of regroup. Then we come back. As soon as we come back, they was on it again. And then eventually they just kind of fade to where they wasn't biting real good. Then we leave them alone and come back. And just repeat, wash, repeat, and rinse. So
is this on a lake or river?
River.
Okay.
Gasconade River.
Okay.
Yep. But it's I just don't want to give it too much. And I probably already did, because if any of my fellow anglers that I fish against are hearing this and they seen where I was sitting all day pretty much the other tournament, they're going to know. That's a pretty good. And I know they seen us sitting there. But we wasn't there all day. We moved back and forth. But the majority of the day, we was on that one spot. And literally every fish we weighed in come from that one spot, including that 4.5 or that 438. So, and that's a heck of a smallmouth, a 4.38-pound smallmouth. That's a giant smallmouth for the river.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's big.
So do you mark these spots with a GPS?
Or
do you just memorize where they are?
You just know. Okay. You have a GPS up here in your head. You know, yeah. You know where – you just have landmarks. And that's another thing. There's some distinct landmarks where this spot is that if that video was to be seen, they'd know where it was automatically.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even want to say what it is, but there's distinct landmarks. They'd know right where it was at. And I don't want to give it away until after this tournament, because hopefully it's going to produce one more time, and that's all I need until next year. So, yep. So that's where we're going with that. And but other than that, you know, then I had a guide trip the following day with some clients. Matter of fact, I just want to talk about that. You know that Bill was talking about that big kayak tournament. You remember that big kayak tournament he was talking about? Well, I took a kid, and you'll have to remember this kid's name. His name is Jack Stevens. Remember that name, because I think his kid's going to win that big tournament. I took him on the river, and he was specifically wanting to learn the river. He's a great angler. He's a sophomore in high school. And he's won three Angler of the Years already as a sophomore, high school championship Angler of the Year.
This is against everybody, not just his age group or
everybody.
Something?
Everybody. He's fishing against everybody. It don't matter if they're 10 or if they're 60. You know, they've been fishing for 5 months or 50 years. Yep. And but I took him and his dad fishing, pretty much show him the ropes, and I said, I want you to win so bad because I'm not going to be able to fish this tournament, and I love nothing more than to see you – my protege, so to speak, you know, mm-hmm. teaching him everything on how exactly I'd fish it, where to fish, everything, and what to throw, when to throw it. He's already a great angler, so I'm not taking anything away from him, but I literally showed him everything. I showed him every spot, every lure that I would use in that spot, how to use it, which spots to spend more time on, which spots not to spend as much time on. So him and his dad are fishing it. I wish them a lot of luck. Like I said, Jack Stevens, Tim Stevens' dad. But remember that, because when we see the results, and I say, you remember me talking about that kid, Jack Stevens, you know, a couple weeks ago?
Right.
And then, so, you know, I'm just kind of calling him a shot right now, because I think he's going to do pretty well.
So when's the tournament?
Next weekend. This weekend. It's the 22nd. It's this Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah, the same time I have a tournament on the Gasconade, but it's a sanctioned. It's the fish off is what it is for Jeff Feeler's club, the Gasco Stage Buddy Bassmasters.
Right.
You guys have had Jeff Feeler on here before.
We did have. Yeah, right.
Yeah, Jeff's a good guy. Good guy. But that's what we got going on this week. And I'm trying to think what else.
Now, how many tournaments have you won this year?
Let's see. You know, I don't want to quote you on that. I think it's only been three,
Boy, Jerry, the guy's got to think about this.
Yeah, I think it's only been three. Since 2016, 16 was a great year for us. We won and won and won and won. It's like first, second, first. I mean, it was just we was dominant that year as far as victories goes. This year, we've just been consistent. We've lost a lot of real close first place finishes where we thought we had first, and then you ended up just, well, like this one. We thought we had it, you know, with the bag like that. Usually 7 to 9 pounds is going to win it. And when you have 10.5, you're thinking, man, I got this, especially with a 4.5-pound kicker. But, you know, it didn't work out. Actually, Tim Feeler, not Jeff, but his brother Tim, won the tournament, him and Stacy Helton. Good guys, both good guys. And I don't know if they know where they were fishing, but come to find out, we were both fishing the same hole, but different ends of it. Like, they were fishing the head of it, and we were fishing the tail of it. Does that make sense?
Pretty big hole.
Yeah, it's a big one, and I'm probably saying too much. Seth's going to kill me, but I'm just telling the truth, and I'm speaking my mind because that's what, you know, kind of what was going on. But before we go on about any more smallmouth, have you do any trout fishing this weekend?
Or? No, I'm afraid not. I was too busy in the shop, but Saturday was a beautiful day, and I spent some time at the Missouri Trappers Association rendezvous doing a live broadcast here, and we'll get more into that later. But very interesting. I learned a lot about trapping, and as I told one of the guys, gee, I hadn't trapped since I was a kid and built box traps for rabbits, you know, back home in West Kentucky.
Yeah. I'm interested in hearing a little bit about it, too, because I'm not a big trapper, but I'm always wanting to learn about anything got to do with the outdoors.
Well, know, anything to do with the outdoors. And what impressed me, as I told John earlier, I was amazed at how many young people were there and really getting into this. And anytime I see young people getting involved in the outdoors, I think it's a good thing.
Absolutely.
Regardless of which sport it is they're involved in.
I agree. I love seeing young kids, and it's just a rarity these days. You know, most kids are stuck to their tablets and iPads and TVs and computers, whatever it is. It's modern technology rather than going outside and playing. So,
One of the things that struck me about the trappers was watching the people. I was like that anyway, but most of the guys, it seemed like, would have not only one of those leather holsters with a pair of pliers on, but also a big sheath knife as well.
Yeah.
I mean, Crocodile Dundee would have been right at home here.
Right.
Well, coming up, we'll be talking with a guy who's not only well-versed in the outdoors, but someone who tells a great story or two as well. Ryan Malaszewski, or Milo as we call him, will be right back with us. Stick around. You're listening to Wild at Heart. I'm Tommy Bench.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3 FM. This segment is brought to you by Cowtown USA, home of the Can-Am ATVs and UTVs, and Living the Dream Outdoor Properties. It's not just the land, it's a lifestyle, and we live it. Next up, we got Milo. Milo, are you there with us?
I'm here.
How's it going?
It's going well. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm not doing too bad. I see you in a... You and Bill's been in some action. They're over there at CNR, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. We've been having quite a couple weekends. Teal hunting, scouting for deer, did a little deer hunting last weekend. And yeah, it's been fun.
Well, good deal. How'd you do on any deer? Any luck with the deer hunting?
Heck no. It was 94 degrees, I think. Plus 7 one night, Saturday night, and then nothing on Sunday night, so it was tough, but this weekend should be better with the cooler weather.
Oh, absolutely. I was thinking the same thing. That's one thing I was telling people. They asked if I've been hunting yet. I bought my tags, you know, on the app a long time ago, here 2 or 3 weeks ago, but man, it's been so hot. I couldn't imagine sitting out there sweating, especially, you know, like, other than maybe first light and right before dark, maybe, or first light in particular, but man, I bet you imagine someone sitting out there all day long. They'd have to be pretty die hard to do that.
No way I'd do that. Deer don't even move during the middle of the day right now.
No.
Because they're getting water.
Right.
Hey, Milo. Milo, I know Bill is really big into teal hunting. How's the teal hunting been with Bill and BJ?
Really good. He hasn't had a chance to bring BJ down there yet, but... it was good. I mean, last Sunday we had one group, about 30, come in, and we knocked down as many as we could. And last Saturday we shot a couple green wings. And, it's been kind of hit or miss, but there's always been at least a few birds around down there. It's right by Four Rivers, so it's been hit or miss. It's pretty much the entire state of Missouri from what I've been hearing.
Yeah, I know in this area here, we were talking once before, Bill and I, about this, and thought that probably the teal had moved on down from here, but apparently you've still got them over there.
Yeah, you know, and well, Bill actually this week shot quite a few, and he saw a bunch this morning. So I think there was a couple waves, because there's a bunch in Texas right now. The guys are hitting, but I think another wave came down last weekend, and I think with this cooler weather, it's 40 degrees up in Canada right now. I think we're going to get another wave here. The last week, I think, is going to be really solid.
Good deal.
Hey, Milo, one more thing I was wanting to talk about. You got a new app. You're running a new app for the Drury Brothers. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, I'm not running it, but I'm contributing to it.
There you go, contributing.
They have a new app out, DeerCast. It just launched end of August. It's free this year anyway. I think people are going to find most useful about it is the algorithms. There's 12 different algorithms they use to kind of calculate a deer movement for the day or for even an hour-by-hour basis. So as soon as you open the app, it'll give you, you know, a forecast or for the morning and evening. If it's good, great, poor. Right now it's poor for until Friday.
Absolutely. So, I can imagine with the heat, just like you were talking about with the extreme heat that we have, they're not going to be moving.
Yeah, it's 97 right now.
So, yeah.
I mean, this is not ideal. But also on there, there's a bunch of articles. We have a team, I think it's about 8 or 9 of us, that are writing just various articles on the web, on the app. So at the top of your screen, you're going to see, you know, the forecast, and then you keep scrolling, you'll see all kinds of articles, whether, you know, it's one right now is about avoiding the sting, you know, things that sting you in the deer stand and stuff like that. I've done a bunch of member spotlight articles for the DOD team, and you know, it's fun. I actually won Writer of the Month.
Wow. Congratulations.
You're doing something right. Thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a lot of good information, too, that, you know, people may take for granted, you know, things that can sting you. I mean, it's definitely something to think about. You're out there in the woods and you do get stung. You know, you read this article, maybe you have a little bit more knowledge about what it could be or what to do to help.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Just kind of, you know, it's, the articles aren't long, you know, 300 to 600 words, so it's not something you're going to be scrolling, and, you know, you'll get the point, you know.
Well, and a lot of times that's what a reader's looking for is something that doesn't, they don't have to sit there and read for, you know, an hour, or not necessarily an hour, but you know what I mean? If they, you know, I've seen a lot of articles online, it'll say a 2-minute read or a 5-minute read. And I think that intrigues people to think, well, that shouldn't take long. I'm interested, but I don't want to sit there for 20 minutes reading about whatever, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's short and sweet. You know, it's usually what we're, you know, bullet pointed out. So, you know, like top 10 tips. I did an article on the top books you should read as a hunter. And I just had 5 listings and the quick little synopsis of it. And, you know, I think it was 340 words. So, I mean, you could read it in, you know, 3 minutes. Probably.
Right.
So I think that's the goal, you know.
Right. No, for sure. I think that's a great idea. And good way to attract people, you know, readers. But hey, is this app, I'm assuming it's for Android or Apple, either one, it's just basically an app? Good.
Either one.
What's that?
I said either one.
Yeah.
It's Apple, you go to your app store, or you can go to your Google Play store and just search DeerCast, and it'll be the first thing that pops up, and download it. Like I said, it's free
for now,
and it's for now. We'll see how it goes. But, yeah, if you just type in DeerCast, it's the first one that opens up, and you just download it and allow it to use your location. And whenever you're hunting, you know, get to your hunting property, just pull it up, and it'll tell you the forecast, you know, like I said, hour by hour. And I talked to quite a bit of the field staff was able to use it last year, and I talked to quite a bit of them about it, and they said it was pretty uncanny how accurate it was. Even, you know, like I said, the hour by hour was incredibly accurate.
Wow. I'm looking forward to using it myself, because I used an app similar to that before. I can't remember the exact name of the app, but I'll definitely be using DeerCast now.
I would.
I think
I'd recommend everybody download it.
Absolutely, especially with it being free now and possibly not next year. You know, if it really blows up, you know, it's not going to be free anymore. That's the way anything is. It's
yeah, I think we had 50,000 users as of last Wednesday.
Wow. So and it just came out.
Yep. So, and it's been out for about, 2 or 3 weeks now.
Wow.
That's incredible.
About 3 weeks, yeah. And it's growing by the day, by the hour, you know, and people are, and there's a lot of, the thing that's really good about it is we're posting a lot of exclusive content just to DeerCast this year. So, you know, it won't be on Facebook, it won't be on Instagram, it won't be on Twitter, it'll just be on DeerCast. So, like Mark just shot a, yesterday, just shot a 150-incher in Missouri, and you can go on to DeerCast right now, and the top story, you could watch the video of him shooting that deer.
So I'm going to do that tonight. You got me pumped up about it already. Hey, Milo, I got another question for you, because I know a lot of these apps, you can put in your zip, or they do a geographic area or region. Is that how this works? Is it like a Midwest region, or how does that work as far as?
Nope.
It's straight across
really
the board.
Simple. It's really simple. So when you download the app and you open it for the first time, it'll ask you if you want it to allow location services. So wherever you're at, I could be driving right now and open up the app and it'll say, okay, this is where you're at, and at the top of the screen it'll tell you your location. So if you allow the location services, it'll just automatically know where you're at.
Perfect.
When you open the app. So, you know, it's going to be different, compared to, where you're at, different cities. And you can add locations, too. So, you're at your house and you have an hour away from deer camp or whatever, you can add a new location. If you just click on the top, it shows you your current location. You just click on it, you can add a new one. So you could have two or three farms that you hunt saved on there, and you can check them and say, well, DeerCast says, it's going to be great this morning on this farm, but good and maybe fair on the other farm, so I'm going to hunt this farm.
And I'm sure that has a lot to do with wind direction and barometric pressure, and I'm sure that's all, like you said, a lot. There's probably a ton of information involved in that.
Yeah, like I said, there's 11 or 12 algorithms that they use, so it's, like you said, weather, rainfall, barometric pressure, moon phase, moon rise. So, when the moon is, coming up, usually is a lot better in the afternoons. And there's a lot that goes into it. But it's, like I said, they said it was really uncanny and really, really accurate. So I'm excited to use it. It was accurate on Sunday. It said it was going to be poor, and it was poor. So.
It called it, didn't it? 100% right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I shouldn't have hunted. I sweated.
Yeah, that's about all you did all day.
Yep.
Well, I'm looking forward to get a lot cooler as well. I'm like you. I don't really like to get out there if it's that hot.
Agreed.
First of all, the deer activity is terrible, and you're just miserable, and everything's miserable in general.
So. It's all horrible, yeah. It's not fun, man, when it's hot out. I really don't start hunting hard until October 25th or so. I'll go out on some of the good days in October, and, usually the last week in September it's cooled down enough to where it's not miserable. I'm going to hunt, almost every weekend, or at least be in an opportunity to hunt every weekend, but unless it's cool, like this weekend's going to be good.
All right. Well, hey, Milo, we got to go to break here, but we'll stay on the line here. We'll be right back. Coming up, we have more to talk about with Ryan Malaszewski. You're listening to Wild at Heart with Tommy Bench. We'll be right back.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3. Get a damn thing as you can
say we took a lick. Welcome back to Wild at Heart. I'm Tommy Bench, and with me on the phone is Milo. You still there, Milo?
I'm still here.
Sorry about that. I was wanting to talk to you a little bit about early deer season, which we did talk about that already, about how hot it is, for one thing. But what do you think of, if you used to tell our listeners that maybe haven't hunted a whole lot, with you working with, you're an avid deer hunter, of course, Kansas, Missouri, sure. And just the Midwest in general, what kind of advice would you give some of our listeners that may not have the experience that you have, out there? What are some good pointers as far as, how to target early season deer, just in general?
I think the biggest thing with early season deer is hunting the shifting food. Right around September, right around now, is when just everything just becomes available. You know, whether it's cut, farmers are cutting corn right now,
mm-hmm.
a little early, but they're cutting corn. So if you get a deer hunting an area where there's a cornfield and they cut it, you better be sitting over that in the evening. You know, I really just avoid mornings right now. Generally, you know, unless there's, you know, really cool or you get a real big cold front that comes in, I really avoid mornings. Just because, you know, a lot of times the deer are already going to be bedded down when you're in your stand or when you're going to your stand. So one, you risk risk bumping deer, which is not ideal. And two, it's going to be worthless. You know, you're going to be out there just sitting there for no reason. So I mainly hunt the evenings and I hunt the food. So cut corn, acorns are starting to drop right now. I've seen a bunch of white oaks. I've seen a bunch of reds, post oaks. They really like the white oaks the best. So if you have an acorn tree that you know generally starts dropping acorns around this time, or just walk through the woods and find an acorn tree.
Right, you're
going to be hitting that.
You'll know pretty quick.
And then, and another thing is, persimmons are going to change in October, early October. So right now they're really bitter. Once we get that first, 40 degree evening or overnight, once we get the first frost, basically, persimmons will start to ripen and they'll start to fall from the tree. And then after that, when you get the first frost, you're gonna get some really good clover, and some brassicas are gonna get good. So right now, everybody loves the rut. Everybody loves hunting during that time. But, right now it's all about food. The deer are slaves of their stomach. So if you know what the deer are eating, then target it. That's my best advice for anybody early season hunting.
Absolutely. That's some very good advice, too. That's pretty much what I would think as well. I hunt around a lot of oaks, so white oaks in particular. I'm fortunate to have a lot of them around. And crunching acorns is a whole walk to my stand, so I've been spoiled. And then persimmon trees real within 50 yards of my stand as well. I say trees, I think there's two of them, but that's why it's my number one stand, because like you said, those deer, they gotta eat, and that's the number one thing you can target is their food source.
And if you can find an old apple archer too, that's always a cool place.
They love apples. Any apple
sure
archer. A lot of people early season, they want to hunt just, their stands where they, always hunt in November. Generally those stands are just on travel routes, and you might see deer, sure, but, early on, I'd always like hunt there and expect the same result, but, you gotta be on the food and where they want to be, and that, use your trail cam, see where they're entering a cornfield, do some, faraway scouting with the spotting scope, binoculars. Right now they're going to be on that food, and if you can find out what food they're really, really liking, then great. A lot of times the cut corn is great and they'll be all in that, or they'll be in a bean field, but as soon as those acorns start dropping, all of a sudden it seems like the deer disappear.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? They're in the woods and they're eating acorns. They might go out there, after dark.
But, right. But, you had a good point there, Milo, with talking about how some guys will just hunt their favorite stands because they've done well there in November. Like maybe during a rut, there's no rhyme or reason why them bucks are traveling through there other than the fact they're chasing does, just like all hot does, get chased by the bucks. But I see the same thing in fishing. There's so many people that chase history, like, hey, I caught a big fish here before. Well, you're fishing in July now, not January, or you know what I mean? You got to think, fish the conditions you're given, hunt the conditions you're given, and what they're doing right now, not history. People chase history too much, and like you
they
said,
really do.
Yeah, like you said it better than any just, hunt what you're given. Last year it may have been ideal conditions temperature-wise, and it may have been a high of 60, where this year we got a high of 90, so...
Exactly. Yeah.
Totally different.
Fish are the same way. Fish are slaves of their stomach.
They are.
They're going to follow certain fish. In October, in the fall here, they're going to be targeting shad. Or, if we're in the summer, they might be eating frogs or bluegill. It's the same thing. Not to say that history's bad, though. Because, I've hunted stands where, in November or a certain time of year where I know the deer are going to be there. And I wait until a certain date. You know, I had a pinpoint on a farm I used to hunt in Gasconade County where, you know, from about October 31st to November 5th, I would just see sit in a certain stand and there'd be bucks just cruising by almost all day. And I knew that's where I was going to get the chance to shoot a big buck or, you know, that's where I needed to be, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes it didn't work out and sometimes it did. But, you know, I wasn't hunting on the edge of a food source, you know, when during that, you know, 4 or 5 day period. You know, I knew where they were going to be. And, you know, it takes a lot of time. But, you know, if you're, just kind of an average hunter, you know, you're not too serious into it like some of us nuts are. The best thing to do right now would just be sit on the edge of a cornfield or a bean field and just observe and then see where they come out, where they're going to, and set up a stand or set up a blind and go after them.
Well, just like they say,
you have to.
I've always heard, you know, and this is something I think you can live by as an outdoorsman, time in the woods or time in the water, whichever the case might be, whatever you're doing, time out there is irreplaceable.
Exactly. Yeah. It's better than anything else.
It's better. That's right. It's better than just. Well, and talking about the history, like I said, history is. I always look at it like it's a good starting point. Okay, this is what they were doing last year under the same conditions. You can, and it's a good starting point, but I just wouldn't beat it to death and thinking, oh, well, I got to stay here for the, you know, 8 days later, you haven't seen a deer. You're like, well, I got to stay here. I killed one 6 years ago here. So,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, that's a good point because what I do, and I've done since 2007, I kept a hunting journal. So every day I hunt, I'd write down what I saw, what the temperature was, what the barometric pressure was, you know, conditions, cloudy, sunny, whatever. And then I'll look back as we're approaching those certain dates and say, okay, well, I'm not going to do this because it's totally different. Or, you know, this is similar. Maybe a week later, maybe I'll try this spot. And it's correlated almost every time. You know, there's been times I've hunted that, you know, that hot stand I was talking about. I haven't seen anything. I was like, man, I wonder what the deal is. And I went and looked back over the past, you know, 10 years or whatever it was. And I said, okay, well, this day in 2009, it was the same conditions and I didn't see anything. So I bet that's what it was, you know, the barometric pressure or the temperature or whatever it was.
Right.
You know, I think that's huge. Just you get to learn your deer.
But see, and that's, you just mentioned one thing that I think is so interesting that I done as well for fishing in particular. I had a journal. You know, for the longest time, I'd write down the water temperature, the moon phase, the air temperature, and the water temperature, water clarity, everything, what I used to catch the fish, and what did and didn't work well, you know, in particular, what did work well. And when I had bad days, just be honest and write it down. It was not good today. I didn't figure them out or tried this, tried that with no, you know, just a few fish. So.
Well, yeah, and it helps you from, you know, kind of beating a dead horse and just, you know, if you like for fishing, if you're throwing a spinnerbait and you know that you never really caught them on a spinnerbait, why don't, you know, let's just try something different, you know, throw a different lure that you haven't used or sit in a different stand you haven't hunted this time of year. Just see, you know, you kind of get to learn, you know, okay, well, I don't have to be here. I can kind of expand my territory and kind of see maybe if it works out, you know, and it's probably 9 times out of 10, it won't, but if it does, then you write that down and say, okay, if I have these same conditions next year at this time, I'm going to be sitting in that tree.
Yeah, for sure. That's exactly right. That's what I would do. I mean, it's only, you know, makes sense. It makes a lot of sense to do that.
Yep, absolutely.
So one more thing I was wanting to talk to you about, just since I had you on here, is we're planning on going to Taney Como. You was going to take me and show me the ropes to Taney Como. What do you think about that? I know that we're going to try to get it. We'll get there eventually. But
we'll get there. Yeah, I've had some stuff come up. I actually started working for... You mentioned earlier, but CNR Outfitters over near Rich Hill, Missouri, to kind of being their chief editor and social media programmer. So been having to go down there a lot and just kind of, you know, get everything set up and, you know, get content. So we haven't been able to do the Taney Como thing yet, but we're definitely going to do it. I haven't been down there since, gosh, June. Caught a lot of big fish.
Oh, yeah. I know I've heard a lot of stories about the fish caught on there. Even Jerry's told me some stories about Taney Como fish. And Seth, of course, I know so many people. And you guys have all got me all pumped up to get there. So now I've been thinking about it and can't wait to get there. Well, like you said, we'll get there one of these days.
We'll target for October or maybe November.
Oh, it'll be worth the wait. I promise you that.
It will be.
I'll be excited
Absolutely.
About it.
Yeah, I love that place.
So anyway, what else is going on? And I know you've got a lot of things going on. You write for a lot. For a lot of different organizations, and like I said, the new deer hunting app, and how do you even get spare time to do anything? You seem like a pretty
it's hard, but honestly, with the writing, you know, I've always been good at it, and you know, I got into outdoor writing about 6 years ago, and just kind of plowed away. You know, it took 2 years for me to get paid for anything I did, you know. And yeah. But I think it's just a lesson anybody can take. You know, you don't expect overnight success.
Yeah. Well, but, hey, know, Milo, I've got to get things wrapped up here. We got another segment coming up here. Hey, thanks for joining us, and I'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Milo.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Milo. Bye. Hey, Jerry, I was wanting to ask you about this Saturday morning, the Missouri Trapper Association. You was down there doing some big things.
Yeah, we did a live broadcast from the Commons in Salem there for the Missouri Trappers Association. And I was really impressed by several things. One, the number of people there, and two, the number of youth that were there participating in that. I think anytime you get young people involved in the outdoors, regardless of the sport, it's a good thing. It's a future of the outdoors. And I really learned some interesting things and saw some interesting things. And, of course, you know, it's always interesting people watching around something like that. Trappers obviously are a different breed of people than we fly fishermen are. Mm-hmm. But I just enjoy them all.
Yeah.
It just was very entertaining to me. And so what we've got coming up here next in our next segment, you'll hear a little about trapping with two very interesting and experienced trappers I had with me on the show Saturday. That's coming up in the next 3 minutes, so don't go away. I'm Jerry Cook, and this is Wild at Heart.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart, your source for information about what's going on in the world of outdoor recreation in the Ozarks and points beyond. This segment of our show is brought to you by Shady Lane Cabins and Motel in Eminence, offering you a comfortable night's sleep after a long day on the river. Tommy and I had a really interesting morning at the Missouri Trappers Association Fall Rendezvous last Saturday. We did 1 hour live Wild at Heart there. I got to meet a lot of interesting people and learn a lot about trapping. Two of the guests that I had on the show were Rick Frederick and Clay Creech. I started out by asking Clay how he got started in trapping.
Oh, I've been trapping since I was a kid. My dad dabbled in trapping. My brother got more into it. I got more into it, and it's snowballed for about the last 45 years. So
that's a big snowball. So, is this just a hobby for you, or do you do anything professionally? Or
I'm a conservation agent.
Okay.
In North Missouri, and you know, we do a lot of damage control work for people.
Right.
So that all kind of ties in with my job.
Sure.
You know, I enjoy trapping for sport, and, mm-hmm. and you know, try to make a profit on the furs, but it also ties in with my job, and
right.
then I can do damage control work for people.
Yeah.
And, so, yeah, it's a year-round sport. It really is.
And I know you guys get called in every now and then when there's a nuisance on someone's property.
We do. Yeah. Yes.
part of the job.
Yes. Yeah.
And, Rick, how about yourself? How did you
I started trapping when I was like 11, 12, 13 years old. My grandfather's really got me started in it. And then a real good friend of mine really got the ball rolling. And that's been going on for 45 years now. So,
wow.
So enjoy it and enjoy being outside and out in the wilderness and in the woods and seeing what Mother Nature can dish out for us.
And, you know, that's the main thing, I think, is just being outdoors and being in the woods and enjoying the fresh air, if you will, and
sure. Yeah.
And what's going on around you, observing wildlife. And,
yeah. And nobody observes more than trappers.
Yeah, yeah. Because, exactly. Yeah. You know, yeah.
There's a lot of species to understand and to harvest these animals. You have to know their habitat and their ways of life and what they do.
Sure.
So it's a fun sport. It's fun to get into for the youngsters. And some of it's expensive, some of the equipment, but there's benefits too.
So, oh yeah. Yeah.
So,
and do you do anything professionally, or is this just a hobby for you? Or?
More of a hobby for me. I do a little bit of damage work, for some beaver on the levee districts around home, and some coyote control for ranchers and stuff.
Yeah. I didn't know beavers were a problem in the levees. I know groundhogs can cause a lot of, a lot of damage on levees.
Mm-hmm. Well, the beavers, they dam up the culverts and pipes and drainage ditches and stuff like that, and they could flood a lot of area.
Yeah, I'd never thought about that part of it, but it makes perfect sense to me.
Well, a 2-foot dam can back water up a pretty good ways in the fields, you know, when they're that flat in the bottoms and stuff.
Yeah, and the country you are from, pretty flat up there.
Yeah, parts of it is. There's some rough country too. But
and you're from some pretty flat country too.
I'm in rolling farm country, but it's biggest hills we got are levees.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Well, of course we're not used to that down here in the Ozarks.
Right.
We see some real hills down here, but my business, I'm into fly fishing, and one of the things I really enjoy, as we were just speaking about, is being out on the water early in the morning and just kind of seeing the world come to life.
You bet.
You know, the wildlife's still moving around. The squirrels are out moving around, and even chipmunks and river otters.
All of it.
One thing about the trapping, though, is you're out there a lot of times when the weather's cold.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool, snow's flying, and there's not a lot of other people out there. So,
and that's my favorite time to be out there, actually.
Yeah, exactly, right.
You know, I like to be out there. I don't mind a little snowfall or even a little drizzle.
Yep.
Because the fair weather fishermen or hunters are inside by a warm fire.
Yeah. Well, to be a trapper, I think you have to be more dedicated to your sport than hunting and fishing, because when you set a trap, you've made an obligation to come back to that trap and check it and take care of it.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit more involved. I tell people they can go out hunting for a day, but you generally don't go out trapping for a day.
No.
You know, unless you're just doing it in a little farm pond or something.
Yeah.
But you've made an obligation to come back, and
that's what
the Trapper Association is all about, teaching these youngsters a good ethics and about trapping.
And that's the thing, is the ethical side of it. And, you know, Clay, something was brought up off the air here earlier is the legalities of this. Permits, don't your traps have to be tagged as well?
They do. Trapping's a highly regulated sport.
Yeah.
And you know, the Department of Conservation surveys have found over the years that, you know, the general public supports trapping as long as it's regulated.
Yeah.
And it is highly regulated. It's just like all the other hunting sports. You know, there's seasons, there's limits on certain species. There's, there's length of time that you have to check your traps every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some lethal methods, it's every 2 days.
Uh-huh.
But most traps have to be checked every day by law. They have to be have the name and address or conservation number attached to that trap. Every trap has to be labeled so that we know whose it is.
And, well, I think that's interesting. And go ahead and expand on that if you'd like, because I think our listeners would like to know that information.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of restrictions on the types of traps we can use. Obviously, you know, trappers want to use the most humane traps out there. And, you know, a lot of the laws are pointed towards that. A lot of people that don't know much about trap, they think of a trap with teeth. And, you know, teeth are illegal to use on traps, you know. And trappers have always been great innovators on having the most humane trap out there. And we do, and, you know, there's lots of modifications they've done to it and improvements over the years. And you know, that's it. You know, you could spend a whole day talking about all the improvements that you can do to traps.
Wow.
And it's just people don't think of all that unless they're out here at a convention like this and somebody can show them hands-on what, you know, all these improvements that we'd have done to these traps over the years.
Well, and I think you hit on something there. Most people think of these traps as having teeth and so on, and I know that I've seen traps that were smooth and
right. And you know, there's just so many things that, you know, the general public, when the conservation department restocked river otters in Missouri, you know, those river otters were brought up here from Louisiana. Those otters were caught in steel traps by the feet, totally unharmed, and brought all the way back up here and released during our, you know, restocking efforts.
And so, they're alive and well now.
They're doing quite well.
There's still studies being in other states on the river otter, and they're using trappers to catch these. And they're not tagging them.
And there's
stuff. So
bobcat studies, lynx studies, you know, wolf studies. And they're, all those animals are caught with foothold traps.
And, you know, I don't think the general public realizes that, how much research goes on.
Oh, lots of research.
And how much trappers contribute to that research.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
And it's a necessary thing, I think, to for the species to survive, is to know more about their behavior. And
trappers save the, you know, jaws off of otters and bobcats, and we turn those into our fur bear biologist, Laura Conley, and you know, they age those otters, and you know, everyone is, you know, we tell them what sex it is, and when it was caught, what county it was caught in, and then they can take that jaw, that bottom jaw, and they can age it. They get a idea of you know, breeding success, and you know, age classes of what we're catching. There's lots of research involved with this. You know, this isn't a turn everybody loose, you know, Wild West, you know, situation. This is a highly regulated sport. It requires a license. You know, you have to have a trapping license, just like you have to have a hunting license. Mm-hmm. It's not a Wild West situation.
Yeah.
It's
And I think, again, the general public doesn't realize that.
No.
Because there's not enough of what's going on out here that goes on to educate the public about that.
Right. You know, as far as trapper numbers, that's something else that's, you know, kind of fascinating. I mean, in the last 10 years, we had times where we were selling, you know, 13,000-14,000 trapping licenses a year. Mm-hmm. That was pretty high end, you know.
Yeah.
Now, because of the decline in the, you know, fur market, and it's just kind of the diehard still out there getting with, and a few people beginning, getting rolling. But, you know, now we're selling 2,500 trapping licenses a year. Okay. Versus half a million deer hunters.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a small segment of sportsmen that have a big effect.
Yeah.
On the population.
Yeah. And that's a big decline in trapping license, too.
Yes.
If I may ask, since you touched on that, what does a trapping license cost?
$10.
$10? Pretty cheap, I'd say.
For a whole year.
Well, gentlemen, I tell you what, we've got to wrap this up, but it's been a real pleasure having you on here. Thanks for giving us your time.
You're welcome.
And thanks for sharing your experience and your information.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate you stopping by. My guests were Rick Frederick and Clay Creech. Stay tuned. Coming up in just 3 minutes, we'll be talking with Carolyn Parker with River Run Outfitters in beautiful Branson, Missouri, on beautiful Lake Taneycomo.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart. This segment of our show is brought to you by Advanced Performance Shooting in Waynesville, offering classes on firearms use and safety. With me on this segment is Carolyn Parker from River Run Outfitters on beautiful Lake Taneycomo. How you doing, Carolyn?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Great. How's the fishing down your way?
Well, you know what? It's pretty darn good. It really is. They changed the generation pattern a little bit. We're seeing a low flow almost, well, here the past couple of weeks, every morning until about 1, maybe the latest 2 o'clock. But the flow's low enough that there's still wadeable water for those folks that like to get out and wade. And you can locate some places that the water's maybe 1.5-2 feet deeper than normal. But because it's got a flow, it's helped the fishing.
Well, yeah, and it helps bring food into some of those holes, too, doesn't it?
It sure does. And, you know, it keeps the oxygen moving around. The oxygen level is still good. As a matter of fact, it really, I just pulled the chart up a little while ago, And during the day with the low flows, it's been great, 6-something, 7-point-something. Once they crank on the other two or three units that they crank on about one, it actually drops the flow down. So that's telling me that our DO is getting low, a little lower on the bottom of Table Rock, or at least I would suspect that.
Well, I know at times there's been a problem with oxygen level there on Taneycomo, and obviously that's bad for the fish and for fishing as well.
It's an annual event. Every year, once we get into November, well, late October, November, December, we're going to see low flows because of the depletion of oxygen on the bottom of Table Rock. So it takes that that flipping of the lake when the temperatures at the bottom level and the upper level get more equal that we'll see sometime in late December, usually January.
So you really
hold our breath. We hold our breath every fall because it just is something that happens. So,
yeah.
You know, heads up to the fishermen who come out there during the fall. Take extra time. Work those fish when you catch them. Make sure that they're healthy again before you release them.
Yeah. And as you just pointed out, you really depend on that turnover of the lake to replenish the oxygen levels. But aren't you getting about ready for the brown trout to start moving up?
We are, and that's what gets everybody excited, you know, because it's getting into the fall and it's getting time for the fish to start spawning. So those brown trouts are going to start moving up. Actually, have talked to a couple of people today that think they had a hold of, one of them said he had a hold of two nice fish, and they lost them because it took him to his backing. And another guy that did the same thing. We're also seeing more nicer fish to the boat, 17, 18, 19 inchers. And we're picking a few browns, not the big guys yet, but we've picked up, you know, a few 16-inch browns over the past couple of weeks. So they're starting, looks like they're starting to move.
And, you know, you mentioned taking them down to the backing. We don't run into that too much around this area on the current river and so on. But, boy, when you get down to Taneycomo, I've actually had that happen to me on the Merrimack River. But, boy, once that fish takes you down to the backing, it can be a real challenge getting him back up to net him.
Boy, that's the truth. You know, all that slack line out there, your chances of keeping him on definitely go down.
Especially if you're running fine tippet.
Yes. I know one of the guys was running 6X this morning.
Well,
he knew he didn't have a chance.
Yeah, I use 6X a lot on Tanny or on the current river, but when it comes to getting down to 7X and even 8X, I stay away from it.
All right, Jerry, I got to interrupt here.
Yes.
You're getting beyond me. All right, so define tippet and 6X.
Explain.
Okay, Carolyn, I'm going to let you run with that one because you can explain it to our engineer here.
And our listeners.
Okay.
And our host, too, Mr. Tommy Bench, who's a big spin-casting smallmouth fisherman.
I was going to chime in there a few times and ask you about the big browns because that's what I'm looking forward to going for my first time at Taneycomo, getting into some browns, hopefully a big one or two. So I was really curious to hear what you said about that, about how the browns are acting, how to catch them.
But I'll let you
know some of the people.
I'll let you explain about the tippet, though, Carolyn.
Yeah, let's talk about tippet right now. For trout especially, trout are more leader shy. So when they're talking all these X's, they're talking diameters. And if you could look at a chart, a 6X is a 0.007 thousandths of an inch in diameter.
Okay.
And then you go to a 7X, and it's going to be a 0.004 thousandths of an inch.
And what was the 6?
The 6 is 0.005.
Okay, so the higher the number, the smaller the diameter.
Higher the number, the smaller the diameter,
gotcha.
And that is important when you're fishing for trout. Hmm. And the truth of the matter is, you know, a lot of people say, well, I'm fishing 2-pound regular fishing line, and that's good. But I bet if they took a look at the diameter that's indicated for that 2-pound, I've seen some as high as the equivalent to a 4X or a 3X.
Oh,
but
wow.
Yet it's a lighter pound test.
Right.
So, you know, it's you take a look at it when you're just getting your pound test line compared to an X size and make sure that you're getting down the smaller sizes. If you're fishing slow, clear water for trout, because they are picky. I've had them come up and I've had 5X on or 6X even swim around my tippet. Now that's insulting.
And oh, I say. Now it
and
is,
then you put on something smaller and the suckers will take it.
Now let me ask you a question. Is fluorocarbon
the trout
a thing with fly fishing, or is that just a spinning and casting line?
Oh, no. It's definitely great for fly fishing because, you know, the light refractive index of fluorocarbon is very close to that of water. It's not invisible, but it's less visible.
Right.
So we definitely go to fluorocarbon when we can.
Good deal. I can relate to that because that's what I use. I'm a diehard fluorocarbon on my gear.
So. You know, Carolyn, the biggest challenge I have in my shop is when I have a bass fisherman come in and you start trying to explain to him about going from the fly line to a leader to tippet. And, yeah. Oh, well, that's 2 pound. I can just use my 2 pound spin casting line. No, for the very same reason you just stated, it's not the same diameter. And while they say that fluorocarbon has the same light reflectivity as water, I've said, you know, if I'm fishing 5X, and just as you stated, the fish will be shy of that. You drop down to 6X, then all of a sudden they hit. What's wrong with that picture?
Well, I said it's very close to.
Right, exactly.
The light refractive index is very close to that of water, but it's not there.
It's not the same, right.
You know, trout are they're very visual. They see stuff, and if it isn't completely disappeared, uh-uh. So you increase your chances by going down to smaller diameter.
Yeah, trout fishing is entirely different than bass or bluegill fishing, and I don't care if it's smallmouth, largemouth, but just other species. Trout are probably the most leader shy of any fish that I've ever gone after.
Amen.
So, Amen. Carolyn, what's the definition of a tippet then?
Okay. This confuses a lot of people, but you have a tapered leader, okay? You're familiar with the tapered leaders? They're fat on one end, thinner on the other end. They attach to your fly line.
Okay.
Approximately 20% of that tapered leader is the diameter that you are seeing on your package, the tippet section. In order to replace or extend that section, we have spools of tippet material there. 30 meters of 6X, 5X, 4X, whatever, that you can add on to your taper leader to either extend or replace that tippet section of your tapered leader that you've consumed or that you want to extend. That's confusing, isn't it?
Well, a little bit, but that's a pretty good explanation.
How long of a tippet do you generally tie on?
If I add tippet to my tapered leader, and I do this in a money-saving way, because fluorocarbon is what I want to present to the fish. So I'll take a mono leader and add at least 3 feet of tippet to the end of that mono leader. Now my fish are seeing fluorocarbon.
Exactly. That makes sense.
And that's typically what I do as well, Carolyn. And this may be different than what you do. But I'll take a 9-foot leader, cut about the last foot off, then tie a tippet ring on so I no longer shorten my leader when I change my tippet, and then I will typically put about 3 foot of fluorocarbon on after that.
Yeah, yep. Usually I just, you know, do a little surges knot and extend it that way, but same thing.
Yeah, and you do it the hard way, I do it the easy way.
Old poopy dude.
I'm with you, Carolyn.
But I tell my customers all the time that I would probably sell more leaders if I didn't sell them tippet rings. But it's what I use and what I recommend, so that's what I do.
Well, you know, we recommend them, too, if people have trouble with that knot. And we probably sell more leaders if we didn't tell people to go right from the get-go and add tippet on to the end of them so they don't chew away their tapered leader.
Exactly. Well, hey, Carolyn, we've got to wrap this segment up, but we'll be...
Boy,
Dad
went in a hurry.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, when you're having fun...
Time flies.
When we come back, we'll have more from Carolyn Parker and River Run Outfitters. I'm Jerry Cook, and we'll be right back.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3 FM. This segment of our show is brought to you by Colton Steakhouse and Grill in Rolla, where we know what's at stake. Also by Trout & Son, serving you with boats, motors, trailers, and accessories since 1972. Located on County Road 1000 in St. James. It's always fun at Trout & Son's. Welcome back, Carolyn.
Thank you.
I think that was a really good explanation of tippet there, and I think that... that John and Tommy just got an education on that, and I know Tommy's looking forward to coming down there and fishing for some of those big trout in Taneycomo. What we have to do, though, is convert him from a spin caster to a fly fisherman.
Oh, no. Well, first time he catches a trout on a, especially a big brown on a fly rod, it'll be a no-brainer. He'll be converted.
He'll be hooked for life, won't he?
Well, no pun intended there, huh?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. You may have to help me, Jerry, because I've got a I had a fly rod, you know, because I'm a guide. I don't know if you knew that, Carolyn, but I guide for smallmouth on the Gasconade River. But I do get fly fishing from time to time. So I bought me a fly rod here 8 or 10 years ago and learned how to use it. I'm not great, but I'm not. I know the basics, and I can catch fish with it. But one of my clients actually broke my fly rod, and I have not replaced it yet. So maybe Jerry can hook me up.
You better go visit Jerry.
I know. I guess I'm going to have to do that and get me a new fly rod.
Be more than happy to fix him right up there. But, hey, Carolyn, we were talking during the break here about state records. And and I'm not quite up on this, but what's the state record on brown trout right now? Do you know?
Oh, my God. You know, I really don't. I know at one time, I think it was 28 pounds, it seems like. But I'm not sure. I don't keep track of those things, and I should, but I don't.
Well,
that's terrible.
I don't keep track of it either because we don't have to worry about anything that large in the current river. But I know you do have those in Taneycomo there. And for some reason, thinking the state record on brown was pushing 30 pounds.
That sounds more realistic to me because I know 28, I think, was it at one time, but I think that was passed. There was something close to 30 or maybe over 30.
Yeah,
I'll have to look that up.
I think 28 pounds was several years ago. And how about Rainbow? Do you know what the record is on that?
I don't know that either.
Well, doggone it, we're going to have to find out, aren't we?
Yes, we are. You know, I just go out and catch fish.
Well, and you know, I'm with you there, Carolyn. To me, just being on the water, catching fish, and of course, when I come down there and use a guide, I always use one of yours, Gina, actually. And you know, one thing I always say, man, she brings along a heck of a nice lunch.
Yes, she does.
So, Jerry, yeah. Tommy and I both dived for our phones. Do you have it there?
28
Everybody
pounds.
Everybody has their priorities.
Yeah. Go ahead, Tommy. Say it again.
Oh, I just read an article. New Missouri state record brown trout weighs 28 pounds. That's Field & Stream magazine article.
Well, it's still 28. Okay.
And the rainbow trout is 15 pounds, 6 ounces.
Well, I would have thought it was larger than that.
Well, you guys have something to...
We have a target. We have a target weight.
Yeah, you got
it. Right, exactly.
Isn't that right, Carolyn?
Go for it.
Yeah. I was hoping you'd help me out.
Well, I tell you what.
You got to go fishing.
Yeah. Seriously, Tommy, you go down there fishing Taneycomo, you've got to get a hold of Carolyn and hook up with one herself or one of her other guides down there because they do an excellent job. And I'm going to tell you something. She and Gina both, I'm not going to talk about age here, But those two gals rode those drift boats like they were 27 years old.
Instead of 37?
Yeah, instead of 37, right.
Yeah, I got you.
Oh, brother.
We only wish, don't we, Carolyn?
Yeah, do we ever.
Anything you've got going on?
Down there.
Pardon? I'm sorry?
I was telling they are trying to get down there, you know, within the next few weeks and go for some of the browns. If they're not up there during the daytime yet, you definitely can go after them at night. You know, browns don't like daylight, so they're somewhat nocturnal.
Right.
And when they get up a little bit older, they become carnivores. So if you really want to target one, go throw them meat.
Yep.
You know, throw them something that looks like a baby, some type of a forage fish.
That's what I always tell customers that come in my shop. I call it mousing. Go down on that river early in the evening, throw mice patterns to the bank and pull it off of that bank as if that mouse is trying to swim the river. And yes, those big browns just love a nice juicy meal like that.
Now educate me a little bit now. Now I'm hearing about mice patterns with a fly rod?
Yeah.
Wow.
You bet.
So how much do these mice patterns weigh? I mean, it can't be too heavy.
Very little.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, they're mostly deer hair
but is it a topwater bait?
Yeah, typically it is. It's a topwater bait. And
that's something I could get into. I like big baits.
Yeah.
I like big fish, too.
You pull this mouse pattern off the bank as if that mouse is trying to swim the river.
Yeah. Well, see, we do the same thing with bass. We've got big buzz baits, and there's actually, I'm trying to think if it's live target. I don't want to get out of subject here, but big, like a mouse. It's a mouse with the tail and all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same here with a fly rod.
That's amazing. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
And Carolyn,
go ahead, John.
Carolyn, you said some sort of a fish also. That sounded like porridge fish.
Well, a forage fish.
Forage fish. Okay.
The sculpins, a little, any kind of little minnow type things, any kind of your little bait fish. They'll eat each other's baby minnow, baby rainbows, baby browns. The thing that's among the younger guys now that are out there throwing lines are big sticks and these big articulated streamers that imitate some type of a fish. And I mean, they're running around beating the banks with those, and they're going to pull some nice fish out of the river with that. You may not get a lot, but you may pull out a big one.
You probably
like that too, because we're talking big honking streamers.
That's what I like.
And you know, we just had a good laugh here because you mentioned articulated streamers before I did.
Yep.
That's Jerry's favorite.
Yeah.
It really is. That's what he brings up every conversation.
As you well know, Carolyn, I like streamers because as I always say, you may catch fewer fish, but you catch bigger fish.
Yep.
Now, Jerry, how much do these articulated streamers weigh?
Very little, really. It just depends on whether they're tied with dumbbell eyes or stick-on eyes. I don't particularly care for the stick-on eyes. I prefer the weight of dumbbell eyes because it helps get it down a little deeper where the bait fish typically will hang out near the bottom.
So it looks like a big fish, but it doesn't hardly weigh anything.
It gives the action, or it looks a lot like a bait fish, a shad. I like the color white because, again, it looks like a shad.
Okay.
That makes sense to me.
How does that sound for you, Carolyn?
That sounds good. I mean, that's exactly it. We do a lot of, we'll throw a lot of this lightweight articulated, but we also use sink tip, either fly lines or sinking leaders to get them down too.
All right, Carolyn.
You want them to ride a little higher. Okay, another explanation.
Yes. Can you explain to our viewer or our listeners, I'm sorry, that
just explain to me, that's all.
Well, okay, explain to John the difference between a streamer and an articulated streamer. That's what I want to hear, the difference between those two.
Oh, well, basically, an articulated streamer is built so that it bends one or two and even sometimes three or four places in its body. A straight streamer is just, it's exactly that. It's on one hook, and it just goes through the water without a whole lot of motion. The articulated, since they have joints in them, they move a whole lot more like a real fish.
Okay, that's a very good explanation.
In different places.
And they're
cool. I mean, they're really cool if you see them in the water.
Yeah, that movement really attracts the fish too. And again, it looks like a big juicy meal to a trout.
That's what I want for my first fly fishing trip this year. An articulated streamer.
We can fix you right up.
Okay, Jerry can fix you up.
I'll send him down there all ready for you, Carolyn. You know, all you got to do is put him on the fish.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll just stand him up in the front of the boat and make him beat the bags.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, that's how you pull him in. And you guys can certainly put him in one of those drift boats and put him in places that he couldn't get to waiting.
That's the truth, too. You know, some of the deeper runs, deeper holes, and sometimes that's where you need to go. Because, you know, like I mentioned earlier, except for the fall when all good sense goes out the window and they come up to spawn, your browns are hanging down in deep, dark holes all by themselves. They're antisocial, don't like the daylight, so you got to go find them.
Well, and that's what I tell people come in my shop. If it's a cloudy day, hey, it's a good day to go after the browns. If it's a bright, sunny day, just go take a nap in your cabin or something.
Or go catch rainbows.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There you go.
Well, hey, Carolyn, we're getting down close to the end of this segment. You want to tell people how to get in touch with you? Or even better yet, do you have anything special going on at River Run Outfitters?
No, we really don't have anything special going on the rest of the year. The biggest thing, of course, will be our women's club. We're meeting again in November. And a lot of the gals will be there in November, but, you know, otherwise, just come on over and see us. You know, we're open 7 days a week, and they can easily get a hold of us by going to our website, riverrunoutfitters.com, or giving us a phone call, 417-332-0460.
And, of course, with your ladies' club there, no men allowed, is that correct?
Not unless they're wearing a wig and they know how to cast.
You think I could get away with that?
We had a couple guys try it. We gave them a brownie and sent them packing.
That doesn't surprise me at all, but I know you ladies have a darn good time down there, and I applaud you for that, because I tell you what, I think women are just as entitled to enjoy this sport as the men are.
I think they are, too. You guys have been hoarding this all for too many years without us. So
well, as you well know, I certainly try to promote the sport to women. So anyway, Carolyn, we've got to go pay some bills here. And I tell you what, it's been a pleasure once again having you on. We'll have to do it again sometime.
I hope so. Thank you, guys. Have a great evening.
You too, Carolyn. All right, coming up in segment 7, you'll get to hear from one of the best fishermen the Lake of the Ozarks has ever seen. Stay tuned. This is Wild at Heart, and I'm Tommy Bench.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart, your source of information, the Ozarks, and a few points beyond. This segment of our show is brought to you by Guard Truck and Equipment and the Outdoor Superstore, your Husqvarna dealer located on the North Outer Road in St. James, and the Missouri Trappers Association, dedicated to preserving the heritage and skills of trapping. Remember, you can always listen to Wild at Heart anytime you want at our website, ESPN1073.com. Just click Programming and Wild at Heart. Now with me, we got Jack Uxo with Jack's Guide Service from Lake of the Ozarks. How's it going there, Jack?
Oh, it's going good, man. I love this time of year. You know, I mean, hunt season just started, football season just started. We got a lot of good fishing in front of us. It's probably my favorite time of year, really.
Oh, for sure, mine too. I love the fall. I tell everyone that you got everything that you could ever want. Great temperatures, like you said. You got football and good fishing and deer hunting and just everything that a lot of us really enjoy. How was I know you was on the water a little bit. You are pretty much are every day. Have you been out on how was the fishing today, by the way?
I don't know. It was all right. I tell you what, this weather that we've got moving in right now is going to help things a lot. You know, we just got done with an unusual warm stretch that made fishing a little on the tough side. And And believe it or not, when you have situations like this in the fall where it's like really hot and muggy and there's like no wind blowing, that's really a bad thing in the fall.
For anything, okay? For any kind of wildlife.
Yeah, yeah, especially for fish and bass and stuff. It's very similar to what happens in the spring when you have a major cold front come in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the temperature's 20 degrees cooler than what it's supposed to be. Well, lately it's been 20 degrees warmer. Okay, so try to remember that, you know, just like in the springtime, it's not like they're going to disappear, but they're going to be a little bit more finicky. Now, the highlight of today's trip is we got on one dock that had a big pile of crappie on it. And I don't know how many we caught off there, a bunch. We took home about 20-something, and we threw back several more. And so that really saved the trip. But the bass were being finicky today. And just a few days ago, we had a great topwater bite. And then there's been at times good crankbait bites and different things. So, you know, that kind of spoils you. I mean, we've had some days here lately where, I mean, we never put the topwater down. Even when it's been sunny out, the topwater is still, and I've seen that before, but it always kind of surprises me when you could just run that topwater all day long and never have to put it down. Because normally speaking, you know, topwater is a low light condition bait. In other words, early in the morning, late in the day, or maybe if you get a cloudy kind of rainy day.
Exactly.
But lately, they've been biting it all day.
Wow, that's my kind of day. I'd love to have a day on Lake of the Ozarks where you can just throw a topwater all day long. Is there any specifics as far as, like, I'm sure you're not just throwing out in the middle of the lake or beating the banks. There's probably specific things you're targeting, though, on this topwater, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. It's all about docks. It's all about lining up the right angle on the dock, making a cast past your target, reeling your bait up to the target. And that way you don't spook them, because mm-hmm. a lot of these fish have been maybe a foot and a half below the surface over 40, 50 feet of water, but they're utilizing the shade of that dock and they're ambushing any kind of shad that comes out there. And plus, you got to figure out the right docks too, because we've got 40,000 docks on Lake of the Ozarks.
Exactly.
And they're not on every one of those docks. Okay?
Yeah, so yeah. how would you tell, like, the listeners, listen, how would you tell them how to pinpoint specifically, not specifically, but give them a kind of an idea of what to look for, or how do you do it? How do you pinpoint which docks you think are going to produce and which ones won't?
Well, I've got the advantage of being on the water every day for a long time.
I said earlier, shad. Time on the water.
Yeah, time on the water. Shad are the big key, okay? Where the shad go are going to be where the active bass are going to be. This year, more than most years, our shad numbers are, I don't want to say limited, but they're not as prolific as they usually have been in the past, okay? There's times in the past where you've been able to basically almost walk on top of the school of shad up.
Yeah, I've seen that a couple years ago.
This is not going to be one of those falls. This fall, there's going to be schools of shad, but when you find them, that actually means something significant, because they're more limited.
Yeah, they're not just everywhere. It's not unlimited supply anymore.
Yeah, yeah, which is going to be a good thing. I mean, you know, like, I know you fished the big tournament here in a couple weeks, the big bass bash, and gosh, I don't know how many thousands of our, you know, Missourians come to fish that thing.
Trust me, I plan on talking to you about that a little bit later on. But, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, trust me, it's coming.
Well, usually that big bass bash comes and the shad are so prolific right then, and they're just everywhere, that it almost doesn't mean anything to be around them, okay? Well, this year, I think it's going to be different. When you get around them now, you know, that's going to be where, you know, whether you're fishing docks or you're fishing brush piles or you're fishing points or whatever, you know, whatever pattern you want to run, it's going to be more important now because of the shad. So follow the shad to the active fish this year more than any other year. You know, if you got good electronics, that's great. A lot of times in the afternoons, even if you don't have good electronics, if you go out in the afternoons or evening, you can just use your eyes. Because in the morning, sometimes they'll be on the surface and sometimes they won't.
Yeah.
Hey, Jack, but if I may ask you a question here, to what do you attribute the decline in the shad population this year?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question.
Because on Tanikomo, you know, of course, I'm a trout fisherman. But on Tanikomo, there's been plenty of shad this year, it seems. And now I'm hearing you talking about a decline in the shad population on Lake of the Ozarks.
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't know if there really is an answer. I mean, we've had kind of a cold spring, but I mean, our summer was pretty standard. I mean, our water flows were a little off than normal. We didn't have as much flow in May and June as we do normally, but it's not like there's a huge decline. It's just not like most of the time, most years we have an overabundance that they all just go to waste.
Really. Well, and I know there's a lot of variables that come into play there, but I was just kind of curious as to what your thoughts were on that.
Yeah, and you'll still be able to find them. I mean, heck, it's just the guys that fish up here and tournament fish up here, particularly in September, October, there's so many that it's hard to put into words. I mean, literally thousands of them in every cove. I mean, just, you know, hundreds, millions, really. I mean, that's just crazy sometimes. And that's going to be, I don't know, it's going to make things better, though, because it's going to be, when you find them, it's going to be important now.
Oh, I know exactly. I know exactly what you're saying, Jack, because I remember that tournament that Mike Scott and I fished. It was the Big Bass Bash a couple years ago, and it was a fall tournament. We found a cove that, like you said, that was the exact way I described it to people. There were so many shad in that cove, you felt like you could literally step out of the boat and walk across the cove. They were everywhere. And we were throwing a whopper, plopper, and a buzzbait, and it was game on. Every other cast, it was a blow-up, nonstop. But that was just because they were all had all the shad corralled in there. We just happened to get lucky. And now, like what you're saying is, now that the abundance of shad are not there, it's very vital that you do find shad. It's probably going to be a good thing now because they don't have that unlimited supply. So they're more localized to where the shad are at because they're not everywhere anymore. They're just here and there.
Yeah. And once fall really settles in, because let's face it, it's just now happening. I mean, we've had glimpses of fall, but for the most part, it's been like a hot, you know, like still summer. I mean, water temperature right now is 79, 80 degrees. It feels great. I'm still seeing people swimming. Okay. You know, there's
on their jet skis and everything, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, and rightfully so, because it's just not that cold yet.
What's
I
the
mean,
water temp?
Yeah. 79, 80 degrees. Like
wow.
I said,
it's
cooled off a touch, but not really, not a whole lot.
It's
but that'll be changing a lot. I mean,
well, not trying
in the next 2 weeks, it'll start to change.
Yeah, and that's probably for the good, though. Shouldn't it be for the good? You know,
absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, one more thing, I was wanting to.
Usually around the Big Bass Bash, it's about 69 degrees. Okay?
I just hope usually the Big Bass Bash will get a huge front that moves in and really destroys the fishing, and I hope that doesn't happen, but I know you don't really like the Big Bass Bash because it takes away your pretty much covers the whole lake with I'll just say people, a lot of anglers.
Hey, Tommy, can I ask a question for a second? Hey, Jack, what is the water temperature in the middle of summer?
84, 85, 86.
Okay.
Mid-80s.
Oh. All right. So you're just down 5 or 6 degrees from summer.
Yeah.
Okay.
And normally it's around 69 degrees, 68 degrees when the Big Bass Bash hits. Okay. That would need to be drop about 10 degrees in about 10 or so days, maybe 2 weeks. So I don't, you know, that's not going to happen. It's going to be a little bit warmer than what it normally is. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, weather is, it's about to change a lot. It's starting to change right now. So, you know, it's fish, and particularly bass, are so much more weather oriented than a trout or bluegill or most other fish. They're very, very temperamental. Okay. Trout, you know, that water temperature doesn't fluctuate 15 degrees in the course of a year. You know, I mean, it goes from, I don't know, whatever the bottom is to maybe 65 degrees at tops. I mean, it doesn't fluctuate that much.
Yeah, top 65. Once they start seeing water temperature like that, trout get pretty lethargic. They're used to seeing water temperatures in the 50s, and but, you know, the trout streams are all spring fed, so the water temperature is pretty consistent.
Yeah, and that's awesome. I like trout fishing too. That's fun. I haven't done it much. I took one trip this year earlier and caught a good handful of trout out in Yellowstone. That was a blast. But unfortunately, I don't get to go to Bennett Springs or Montauk or anywhere else that I used to go to all the time. But, man, I used to fly fish all over.
Hey, Jack, we'll be right back. Hold on just a second. We'll be right back with the next segment. Hey, folks, Jack's not going anywhere. Stay close to your radio. This is Wild at Heart, and I'm Tommy Bench. We'll be right back.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back. I'm Tommy Vance, and you're listening to Wild at Heart. This segment of our show is brought to you by Salty Jack's Bar and Grill in Eminence and by State Farm Insurance Agent Michelle Beckett in Sullivan, helping life go right. We're back with Jack Uxa and talking about Lake of the Ozarks fishing and water temps and just what's going on at the lake.
Yeah, it's been a good fall, really. I mean, our crappie population is great. Bass population is looking really good. It's just, fall is one of those times of year where it's actually what a lot of people consider fun fishing. In other words, you're going to catch a lot of fish. The big ones are always going to be hard to find. That's going to be the real challenge. But if you want to go out and just have an enjoyable day out there right now, and as soon as things cool down just a little bit more, and we're just on the cusp of that, it's going to be awesome. It's such a fun time to fish.
Well, I was going to ask you, Jack, I was wanting to go over a few things. One, a lot of our listeners are wanting, you know, they really, well, like I do myself, I attribute a lot of my fishing knowledge to you. You be one of my very, very good friends, and fishing with you a lot over the years. I've learned a lot from you. But what I would like to talk about is, can you describe the different phases, just for instance, of crappie fishing? A lot of guys can go out there in the spring and catch spawning crappie, no problem. But whenever they're not spawning, or it's dead of the summer, or even fall, they may not know how to catch them. I mean, can you kind of give us what the crappie do, you know, from spring, summer, fall, winter?
I tell you what, it's hard to believe, but the guys that come here in the springtime, and that's really all they know is the springtime, because that's what they think is the best.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be surprised how good the crappie fishing can be, like right now or in the fall or in the winter or just about any time of year. Those fish don't disappear after the spring.
Right.
In fact, in the springtime, a lot of times you've got so many cold fronts coming in and out, you know, and every few days there's a new front. And believe it or not, sometimes the spring is a very challenging time to fish for crappie. Right now, and really the fish spread out in the springtime right now and a lot of other times of year, that when you finally find them, man, you just sit right there and just get your whole limit off of one spot sometimes. Right. I mean, that's, you know, and you don't usually have that happen in the springtime like that.
No, you're right.
So that's it's surprising. It's a lot better than what people think. If you really stick to them, now sometimes it takes you a little while for you to find them. You know, like most of the year, once things warm up, it's going to be all about finding your big docks with some shade on them and some good depth, some bait fish around in the area, and hopefully there's some brush on that dock. You know, and I primarily stick to the main lake section when I'm doing this too. In the spring of the year, they could be anywhere. They could be in the back of the coves. They could be in the middle part of the coves. They could be on the points. You know, they've got a lot more possibilities, you know. And right now, well, it just makes it a whole lot easier because they're a lot easier. You know, they're just pretty much going to be on the main lake.
Right. Well, and then something else, how would you – is there a way to target black crappie over white crappie? Because I know traditionally a lot of our bigger crappie on Lake of the Ozarks are blacks. Is that right or am I wrong?
It's both. I mean, it really there's so many more white crappie that they've got the possibility of getting bigger than blacks. Your blacks, on average, are better quality, like you said.
Yeah.
That's definitely true. When it comes to the biggest ones, though, my biggest ones have been whites.
Wow.
And I know that sounds a little bit, you know, a lot of people wouldn't quite grasp that because whenever you catch a black, it's a good one. And, you know, they're 10 inches and they got thick back.
Yes.
They're a lot of fun. And to target those guys, to answer your question, particularly if you go into the Gravois Arm or some of these river sections, that's where the blacks tend to hide and just
in the clearer water.
Clearer water. They're going to be going really good here once things cool down a little bit more. You can catch them in the summer, but they're not nearly as good as what they are when the water temperature cools down for the blacks. Whites don't seem to be like that so much. Whites are a lot more home bodies. They're a little skinnier. They're skinnier on average, but they're a lot more. They tend to school up in bigger schools. You know,
right.
When it comes to blacks, there's times where you can get a whole limit of blacks off of one spot, but that's rare. Two or three blacks off of one spot is much more the norm. Okay.
Yeah.
And to target them, man, I love that dock shooting.
You can't hardly beat it, can you?
Yeah, isn't it fun? And for you guys that are listening that have never heard that term before, what dock shooting is a unique way of casting where it's a short-distance, high-accuracy style of casting, very similar to pitching is for bass, where you're taking your bait and you're loading your rod. You're bending your rod, maybe not in half, but you're bending the rod quite a bit, and you're holding it, and then you're going to aim to when you let go, that jig is going to be, pulled out of your hand real quick, and it's going to slide underneath the dock into these hard-to-reach spots. And, man, it's such a fun way of catching.
So, Jack, almost sounds like you're shooting this like a slingshot. Is that right?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it's some people, refer to it like that. It started off with fly fishing, really. Some fly fishing anglers would get on some certain banks, and there was no room for a back cast, no room for a roll cast. They would take the bait in their hand. They would load that rod because, fly rods are real flexible. Same thing with crappie rods. And then they just, sling it in there, basically. Just load that rod to where it bends quite a bit and let it rip.
Yeah, but, Jack, we're only dealing with one hook. Do you ever hook yourself doing that?
That's only one hook, too.
I've only done it with one hook. And, no, I've never hooked myself. But you do want to pay attention. You want to hold on to the jig head with the hook point facing away from your fingertips.
I would think.
Jack taught me how to do this technique, by the way.
Yeah, it's one of those things where once you spend an hour doing it, it's really a lot easier than what you thought it was going to be.
It is.
I've had people in my boat say, "Oh my gosh, Jack, you're a fishing god," or something like that. They think it's so unbelievable.
Well, you are, Jack.
See it. I just don't.
He's very modest. He's very, very humble.
Well, hey, I'm just now. I just fish a whole lot more than anybody else.
You do, and you can't beat time on the water. Experience means a lot, and time on the water, time in the woods, time doing anything. Experience goes a long way. I've got one more thing for you, Jack, before I run out of time here. I've only got about 3 minutes or so, but no worries. I was wanting you to kind of give our listeners, because you do have the big Bass Bash coming up.
Yeah.
I know that the patterns are going to change. The patterns are going to change. But what would you recommend if you was to fish the big Bass Bash, or if you was to recommend a specific, not an area, I'm just, how would you approach it as far as how would you fish it? Swim baits, spinner baits, jigs on the bottom, brush, what would be your technique that you would probably go for?
Man, it all sounds good. I mean, all of those techniques you just rattle off can work, should work. A big thing is this time of year, you can do what you want. You can do what you're good at, okay?
Yeah.
I'm good at being a multi-species, multi-technique kind of guy to where I don't care what it is. I'm good with drop shots, flipping jigs, everything in between. Some guys are really good at shallow water, fishing. Like, Tommy, you're really good with a buzz bait and that HD crawl, and those are your confidence baits.
Yeah.
And those are...
That's probably what I'll be throwing, too. Did you see that 4.5-pound smallie I caught?
I did. That was a big one, man. Was that on the buzzbait or was that on the crawl?
That was on the crawl.
I knew it had to be one of those, too. But see, those are your confidence baits. Those are what you're good at.
Yeah.
And everybody's got certain things like that. Believe it or not, even guys that are good with finesse jigs and finesse worms and stuff like that, those will even surprise you. But thing is, what I want people to remember is do what you're good at, because this is a time of year where it's going to be tough. I mean, when that big Bass Bash comes in, there's going to be thousands of people in the water, literally thousands. You're not going to be able to go anywhere, and there's not already going to be somebody already there fishing or have fished that recently. I mean, there's pressure is just like the key word, okay?
Oh, and, I know. I've seen it. It's terrible.
Yeah. So stick to what you know, whether it's skipping an HD crawl underneath a dock. Man, they skip great. And, we've got a lot of docks on this lake, and that's where a lot of the big ones like to go.
Yep.
But some guys are good at fishing fast, covering a lot of water. Some guys are good at fishing deep and slow. You know, all of these things can work, and it's too early to say what's going to work because we don't know what the weather's going to be like and whatnot. But for me, I tell you what I would do. I would run way up one of these rivers, probably the Osage River, and I'd spend all my time up there. The biggest bass I've ever had on Lake of the Ozarks came from way up the Osage River on a black and blue jig. I actually lost the fish, but I saw him. And I've only had two 10-pounders on in my life.
Wow.
One of them came out of a farm pond. The other one I lost up the Osage River a long way.
That's very good information, Jack. I'm sorry to cut you off. We got to get this wrapped up here. But
yeah.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Jack. You gave us a lot of good information, and I look forward to talking to you next time.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks. All right. Wild at Heart is heard every Wednesday afternoon from 4 to 6 with a repeat Sunday morning from 8 to 10. The show is produced in the studios of ESPN 107.3 in Rolla and engineered by John Francis. We'd like to thank our guests today, Rylan Miloszewski, Rick Frederick, Clay Creech, Carolyn Parker, and Jack Uxa. Don't forget, you could always listen to a podcast of this show. Just go to our website at ESPN1073.com. Click programming, and at Wild at Heart, I'm Tommy Bench. Thanks for joining us.
Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3, powered by Cowtown USA, Colton Steakhouse and Grill, J. Cook Fly Rods, The Outdoor Superstore, Shady Lanes Cabins and Motel, Advanced Performance Shooting, Missouri Trappers Association, Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, and State Farm agent Michelle Beckett. The latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond. Wild at Heart, 4 p.m. Wednesdays and 8 a.m. on Sundays on ESPN 107.3.